I mean, what more can you ask for? I worked for them for a while and then went to work for another company that did the same thing, which didn't turn out too well because they went broke after about 4 months. And so here I am again, you know, no job, still now with 5 kids, and with this new career, I knew some people who worked for the State Equalization Board. And so I contacted the State Equalization Board and I went down for an interview and see about working for them. And they, it was on a Thursday, and they asked if I could start Monday. So I worked for the State Equalization Board for 4.5 years, which they went around, you know, studying each town in the state to establish the state equalization rates, which consisted of appraisers who did appraisal of these properties that were picked at random. My work with the state, even though I wasn't a good state employee, my work with the state was wonderful because I got experience that I never could have gotten other places. After I'd been with them a short, maybe a year or something like that, if I can immodestly say that my skills were better than the average, I was put on special, what's called special assignment. So I went around the state appraising property that was unusual. For instance, like the Osago Chasm operation, cooperative apartments in Westchester County, you name it. Anyway, but that was tremendous experience for me, because here I was doing all kinds of different properties that were more difficult than normal. So it was a great background for me. And then, you want me to keep talking about all this?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, then while I was working for the state, I was up in Syracuse, and a fellow I used to work with worked for this mortgage brokerage business as an appraiser. And I called him up to get together for lunch, and we had lunch, and he said, "Well, I'd like you to come talk with my boss," which I did. Anyway, he offered me a job. He did tell me, but at the time I didn't realize that the mortgage brokerage business had been sold to Marine Midland, and the appraisers were going to form a company, separate appraisal, just doing appraisal. So there were three other guys, so that made 4 of us besides Mr. Pomeroy himself. So anyway, I went to work for them, and I didn't realize it at the time, but Don Pomeroy was looking for somebody who thought he could lead this group of very independent people. That's the nature of real estate appraising, really. So I became, after he retired, or partially retired, and I was appointed, or elected, whatever you want to call it, executive assistant or some such thing. But anyway, I did that for a year, and then he retired, and I took over as president, which I remained president for 20 years. We went from 4 people to, we've employed almost 30 people, and became well known and with a very good reputation nationally as well as locally. So that's that. Sorry to bore you.
Oh, no, not at all. You've had a very distinguished career in that realm.
Yeah, well, as I say, I love the work. I just, I never look forward to going to work, because I had so many interesting assignments, and I sort of gained a reputation of being able to do properties that were difficult and hard. In fact, some of our competition would give, if they had a hard problem, they'd call me up and ask me advice, and I'd give it to them, and my partners didn't think that I should be doing that, but I never felt that way. But one of the jobs that I got as a result of my reputation, I guess you could say, and the company's too probably, was the in the Northeast, there were 7 railroads which went bankrupt, mainly because of when the railroads were formed, it was fine, they had good passenger service and so forth, but then the competition became, and the railroads were so close together, there were duplication. But anyway, there was these 7 bankrupt railroads, so the Northeast, in a sense, didn't have any railroads that were survivable. So the United States Railway Association got the job from Congress to do something about this, take over these railroads, pay them for what their assets were worth. And which they did, which they took this thing over. And they were looking for people to appraise bankrupt railroads, which had never been done before. They didn't have any, nobody knew anything about it. So the first order of business was to devise and formulate a methodology to appraise bankrupt railroads. And I was hired on that, and more or less became the lead appraiser. And we spent probably 6 months or more meeting in Washington once a week, setting up the methodology of how we were going to appraise these railroads, because everybody figured they'd end up as a court case. What are they worth? So anyway, devise this methodology, which is still being used today.
Was that when you were president?
Yes.
Of Pomeroy?
Yes.
Do you remember about what year that took place, or years?
Well, it would have been probably 82 to 85, something like that.
When did you retire?
I retired in 88.
And what influenced your decision to retire then?
Well, I don't know for sure. As I said, I liked my work. It wasn't that. But we like to travel. There were certain things that would maybe agitate me a little bit that never did before. I thought, maybe it's time to do something different, So anyway, I worked out a plan with the company to take over my interests, and I worked half-time for, was going to be 3 years, as it turned out, it was only 2 years. But anyway, we started traveling then, and we were enjoying that so much that the work interfered with my travel.
Where did you travel?
Well, we had a travel trailer, and we traveled, we went to Florida for 3 months in the winter. Three of our kids lived in Colorado. One winter we went to the Southwest. One summer, We went to the Northwest, and we went to Colorado two or three times with the trailer. It was a great way to travel because, you know, you take your home with you. You know, your toothbrush is in the bathroom and your clothes are hanging in the closet. And it's at least we thought it was a great way to travel. I guess we probably put about 46,000 miles on the trailer in 6 years that we had it. But we saw a lot of country, and you know, in a way that we had plenty of time to see it, you know. So it was very enjoyable.
How many of your children live in Colorado now?
Three.
And what influenced them to move there?
Well, our youngest daughter, Lori, went to Colorado State and took
park management.
I think that was her major. And then two of our sons, oldest son and youngest, took a trip around the country, and they liked Colorado. So anyway, I think while Lori was still in college out there, the oldest son, went out and set up in Brazelville. He had come to work for us for a few years.
At Pomeroy.
And he went up and set him as an individual appraiser out in Colorado near Glenwood Springs. And then the youngest son, he went to the University of Colorado, and he wanted to stay out there, so he became a real estate appraiser also. He also worked at Pomeroy for a short time, 2 or 3 years, yeah. And they're both still real estate appraisers.
So you kept it in the family.
Yeah, I never really agitated to do that. But it turned out that Bill, who was an engineer, wanted to change his location and so forth, and so he came to work for us. And he was very well suited for the work. He worked with me a lot. I did an awful lot of court work. And you don't want to go to court and have a lot of surprises. Somebody screws up or something. And he was very good. And he helped me. I did teaching. I taught appraisal courses at Syracuse University and down at a community college for about 20 years. That's on the, you know, extension courses, they're called. And he helped me on some of those, doing some of the teaching, because I'd be out of town or whatever. So that worked out quite well. I did get back into teaching, and which I enjoyed.
Is there anything that I've forgotten to ask you about? Or anything you would like to add?
No, I guess, some of the things that have happened in the town that, you know, that have been important, at least in my opinion, some of them happening, of course, a long time in history, you know, such as during the Revolution, General James Clinton's march from the Mohawk Valley to the Otsego Lake and then down. That's Continental Road in Springfield, where they went. And then another very important factor, which played a large part in my growing up, because we lived on Route 20, you know, when became the Cherry Valley Turnpike in about 1805, and my father always told stories. Of course, he was born in 1893, So that was many, many years later after that was formed, but it became a very busy road to, and one of the main things it did was allowed, you know, the people, the farms to take their produce to Albany, and then it went down the Hudson River to New York and so forth. So it became a very important method of traveling. He's telling about the, you know, the cows and the pigs and all these animals that were driven to Albany, and even turkeys. I can't imagine driving a flock of turkeys to, you know, on a road. Apparently what they do is at night, they, wherever they stop, they go up the trees and roost in the trees, and then in the morning would come down and they'd take off again. That's kind of hard to imagine today, but...
Now, did your grandparents tell you about doing that, or...?
No, that was my father.
Oh, your father.
Yeah. I had very little association with my grandfather, Gray, because he died when I was about 7 years old. So, you know, didn't have much. Now, my other grandparents, I guess I had mentioned it once earlier, my mother's father and mother, he was a Methodist minister, and he served a lot of churches around central New York, and he had I guess you could call it a nervous breakdown, and so he got away from the ministry for a few years and came to live near us in East Springfield. Grew strawberries, and as I said, he was a cabinet maker by hobby and was a very good carpenter. But I had a lot of, you know, he was there when I was growing up, and I have a lot of fond memories of my grandparents. But growing up on Route 20, you know, was a little bit different because back in the, before World War II, the traffic, you know, became a main east-west artery here in New York. And the traffic was terrible, and it created some problems on the farm, getting cows across the road and this, that, and the other thing. And one of the things I remember during the Depression was...
You're fine.
was that we had a lot of what we call tramps. You know, people, hobos, I guess is another word, that were traveling along Route 20. And they seemed to... Some of them would stop to get food in their handouts, you know? And I remember my mother always gave them food. And there were some interesting people. And once in a while, some of them would ask for a place to sleep. And we had a hop house where, which was, you know, we had, that's where the chickens were, the laying hens were kept, and machinery and that kind of stuff. But anyway, my father would let them sleep there, which probably wasn't a good idea. But anyway, these people were, you know, kind of down on their luck. One, they used to, you know, in the summertime, you needed extra help on a farm. And one guy came back probably 4 or 5 years in a row every summer. He was in the Merchant Marine, and he'd come back every summer and work a month or two for my father. And I used to love to hear him tell his stories about, you know, his traveling around the world and, you know, the Merchant Marine. Probably sit around and listen to them with my mouth wide open or something. But you know, that we had all kinds of experiences, you know, accidents, this and that, the other thing. So it's a little different living on a busy highway. It's today, it's not the busy highway that it was. When the thruway opened, you know, it was like somebody pulled a switch, you know. Used to be the traffic was heavy, then there was no traffic. But a lot of it has come back. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today. So, I learned a lot.